Welcome to Mindful Social, the show that intersects mindfulness and emotional intelligence with the hectic online world we live in today. Have you ever had a conversation with someone, your kids, your partner, your team, your boss, and things did not turn out the way you expected? I know I have. And talking with my guests this week led to more than one epiphany. Have a listen and see what you think. Hi, Anne. It's really great to have you on the show. I so enjoyed reading the book and seeing how it connects with some of the issues that I've had in my business life as well. So thank you for being here.
Thank you, Janet. That's really good to hear. I'm glad you enjoyed it. I'm glad it's connecting for you and working.
One of the things I gained from reading your bio and doing my background and stuff is I hear you're known as the Queen of Clarity. And at the same time, you won the award most likely to dispute recognized authority. How does that happen?
I'm pretty sure it's the one and only such award ever given. So I'm exceedingly happy with it and proud of it. But I think that to me, clarity creates confidence. Because if you know exactly what you're trying to accomplish and you know how to get there, and I can go on and on and talk about clarity because that's what I wrote The Power of Clarity about. But if you are really, really clear about what you're doing, you're confident. So if I'm sitting in a meeting, or in this case, that was from a training class, a supervisory class, I tend to want to make things really clear and ask a lot of questions. And what I did in that meeting is that, or in that class, is that the instructor kept using Harvard studies. And he thought that if he said they were studies from Harvard, we'd all just bow down and accept every word of them. And I didn't. I kept asking questions about, well, how does that apply to this case? Or how does that apply to us? Or did they do this? Or did they do that? And so in a very good-natured, wonderful fashion, he gave me that award at the end of the class.
That's great. That we're kindred spirits in a way. Although clarity isn't my strongest point, questioning certainly is. So it's pretty fun.
Of all the certificates I got in my corporate life, that's the only one I've kept. It's the only one I really liked. It's great.
So let's talk about the disconnect principle. What is it in short?
Okay, in short, it's super simple. It's that when something doesn't happen or go the way you expected, all you know for certain is that something didn't go the way you expected. And yet there was a disconnect. So as soon as you're, at any time, your expectations are broken and or someone doesn't do what you ask or doesn't do, you know, your expectations aren't met, your best response is, I think we have a disconnect. And the whole point of it is to shift your attention to the situation, the specific disconnect, instead of making the assumptions we're so quick to make about the other person. The other person failed, the other person screwed up, the other person's unreliable. We tend to make these assumptions that we are right and they messed up. And we so often have no idea why our expectations weren't met. There is a zillion possible reasons, and we should just stop and say, I think we have a disconnect. You've eliminated all the blame. You've eliminated any shame, and you're just saying, hey, help me out here. Where do things stand? What do we need to do next? And maybe in some cases, what do we need to do to avoid future disconnects like this one?
I love that. I love that. And actually recognizing that there's a disconnect is interesting too, because as you said, you know, we immediately go to, oh, it's got to be something they did, or maybe we blame ourselves, whatever, but what we're doing is blaming the humans involved and not the actual situation. Is that right?
Yeah. Cause you know, when you think, you know, they might not have heard what we said, they might not have understood, they might have other priorities. Someone might have told them to do something different. They might have known exactly what we wanted, but they thought it was a stupid thing to do. I mean, there are so many possibilities, and some of them are clearly our fault. We didn't communicate it well. We weren't clear. And if you read my book, The Power of Clarity, the whole first chapter is called "We Aren't as Clear as We Think We Are," and it's costly, and it's filled with examples of how we just aren't as clear as we think we are. So what business do we have when our expectations aren't met to be saying that someone else is at fault? But when you say, "I think we
Right.
have a disconnect," you open the door for this objective, respectful, problem-solving conversation to figure out, wait a minute, what happened? And how can, what, first of all, what do we have to do next? Where are we? What do we have to do next? And maybe how can we avoid having this happen again next time?
I have to back up there a little bit and ask you, how do I recognize when I'm in a disconnect? I mean, say that, a partner and I are supposed to work on a project, the whole thing goes haywire and we're not communicating. How do I recognize we have a disconnect? And then how do I not be either defensive or
Yeah,
blaming
that's a
about it?
great question. And the thing is that once you start recognizing disconnects, you realize that they happen about every 30 seconds, And so it becomes really easy. But, I got an email from a guy the other day and he says, "Oh, I think we should do this." Or I no, I think I sent him something, said, "I think we should do this." And he came back, "Oh yeah, we should, that's exactly right." And I immediately went, "I think we have a disconnect. This is what I'm thinking. Is that what you're thinking?" And you just take that moment to say, "Wait a minute. I think we have a disconnect. Let's sort this out." And it applies to everything from, like I say, you're expecting something to have happened. Someone was supposed to give you, finish something and give it to you, and it didn't happen. I think we have a disconnect. Two, more difficult situations like you've got an employee who is, and I dealt with a client on this recently, an employee who they were really struggling to communicate. They were frustrating each other. And they just were not able to resolve things easily and objectively. And so instead of trying to dig in at each other or try to solve all the problems, they just step back. I taught them to step back, kind of hold their hands up and say, "I think we have a disconnect. We have to be able to solve problems better than this. So where are we?"
So in some ways, we have to disconnect from our own connection, our own personal connection to the
Yeah,
outcome.
our own efforts.
Yeah, because there's that whole push me, pull you thing, that we saw when we were kids where, no, I'm going to get my way. No, you're going to get your way. And if we do that, nobody's going to get their
Absolutely.
way.
So in a very emotional moment, just say, "Wait a minute, I think we have a disconnect." And if you can't work it out right then because you are emotional, because you're not sure where things stand and you don't know what ticked you off or what ticked them off, you just say, "I think we have a disconnect. Can we talk about this later?" And then back off and then, cool down and figure out what just happened. What buttons did they push? What buttons did you push? What might you have said that they took the wrong way? And then you get back together and you say, "Okay, I don't know what happened this morning. But let's see if we can figure that out so it doesn't happen again." But by just saying, "I think we have a disconnect, we need to just step back, cool it," it gives you a chance to stop and think and to cool your shoes. And it's like I say, it's respectful, it's objective, it's just so problem-solving oriented with there's no blame, there's no shame.
Yeah, I love that because it kind of diffuses any potential resentment that either person might be feeling. And then it kind of takes down that defensiveness, when I guess that taking the approach of, I think we have a disconnect removes the personalities a
Yeah,
little bit.
because you're focusing on the situation, not the person, not what they did, not their flaws, especially their personal characteristics. "Oh, she's just unreliable." I mean, that doesn't accomplish anything. But you should go, "Wait a minute, something happened here. I was expecting this. What were you expecting?"
Oh, wow. Ask an
Yeah.
actual
Well,
question.
what
Shocking.
did you think I was expecting that? Did you, where did we disconnect? Because it ends up being mutual. So it and defuses was the word you use. It's a perfect word for it because it defuses a situation. And when you think about difficult conversations, most of them are difficult for the simple reason that we have passed judgment. We've decided someone else has messed up. We've decided that they are a problem or they've caused a problem. It's there's that assumption, that judgment in there that I'm right, they're wrong, and I need to fix them. You know, so if you get to the point, I need to fix them, of course it's going to be uncomfortable. And of course they're going to get defensive because no matter how carefully you try to script a conversation that, you know, focuses on observable behavior and impact and you use the right words, let's face it, if you have judged them, they're going to see through anything you try to say because they're going to detect your body language, your tone of voice, your facial expressions, and they're going to know that you think they screwed up. So, of course, they're going to get defensive.
Yeah, you talk about that in the book with your boss who would come in, and I love that you were a coder, and you know that everybody codes differently. People don't code specifically in specific patterns. Everybody creates a creative way of debugging and things like that. And this manager that you know you were working with was like, no, we must toe this line specifically. How do you deal with that when you are someone who's a creative problem solver, for example, and your boss is
Yeah,
not?
he I was a software engineer and I was really good at what I did, so it made it even more difficult when he was trying to get me to do certain things because I was effective. So I had a hard time when he would tell me, oh, you need to write a report on this and you need to do that every morning at Monday or you know by 9 o'clock or something. And I'm going, what does that have to do with me producing code? And so that was just like one example that bureaucratic administrative things didn't hold a lot of water with me. So I would not necessarily do some of those things, but you know, how could he chew me out when I was delivering really good code? I had a reputation for writing bug-free code, so why would he bother me of all people? But anyway, yeah, if you have a boss who's trying to force you to do things a certain way and you know, when you think about it, bosses like to make things easy for themselves. So they want to treat everybody the same way. Plus, some of them have this notion that they need to treat everyone the same way so that they're fair. So let's make everyone do the same painful things the same way at the same time. You know, the reality is that bosses should look at their employees as individuals and see what each one of them needs to excel. So if you have a boss who's trying to put you in a you know, square hole and you're a round peg or however that goes. And you say, look, I think we have a disconnect here. This is what I see as important. This is what I'm working on. And I don't understand where you're going with this. Or have a boss that makes a, you know, vague request. I tell lots of stories about that in my book, The Power of Clarity. And you say, listen, I want to avoid a disconnect here. This is what you just asked me to do, and I don't understand what that looks like when I'm done. What's going to be different when I'm done? That's one of my questions, by the way. What's going to be different when I'm done? And the boss needs to be able to articulate that very carefully, or you're going to have a disconnect.
Right. And you'll keep having the disconnect over and over
Yes.
and over again.
Oh, yeah. And
Yeah.
because people aren't as clear as they think they are, it happens all the time. So it's wonderful to have this simple phrase that says, I think we have a disconnect, or I think we're about to have a disconnect, or I want to avoid a disconnect. Help me understand exactly what you're looking for here.
Right. And that really just opens the door to understand what's really going on, that it's not just about one thing. It's always about personalities too. It's always about personalities too, whether
Yeah,
we
well,
like
we're
it or
all
not.
different, but we shouldn't be making assumptions
Sure.
about other people, what they're capable of, or why they do things the way they do. You know, you can't see reliability, you can't see laziness, you can't see intelligence, you can't see sincerity. All you can see are behaviors that we make assumptions that the other person is reliable or unreliable or smart or not smart. And it's like, what's the point? Let's just focus on what they do. What's the behavior?
You're such a coder.
Is it working or
What's
isn't
the
it?
point?
Well, I was a software engineer a long time ago. That's ancient.
Yeah, it never leaves. Well, let's talk about that a little bit more. Let's talk about feedback. You know, if you are a manager, and yeah, you do have certain things that have to get done, but you know, how do we give effective feedback? And you know, you've already said, okay, give it a little time if necessary. You know, you don't have to give feedback in the exact moment. So how do we set ourselves up to do that
Right.
well?
Okay. Well, so let me back up a little bit and point out that someone really did the world a huge disservice when they dreamed up this notion of constructive feedback or corrective feedback versus positive feedback. You know, it doesn't take someone with a math degree to understand the difference between positive and negative. Those are the opposites, and positive and constructive are not opposites, you know. So when we start talking about constructive feedback, we're hoping that people will take it better or something. And the whole problem is we never should have separated positive from constructive or negative, because feedback is how we learn. And all feedback is constructive. And if I'm doing something well, I want to know exactly why it's good. You know, what did I really do specifically that was good so I can do more of it? And at the same time, we're not so simple that we're always 100% good and 100% screwed up. So we always need to know, what should I do more of? What should I do less of? How should I do things differently? So when you're giving feedback, it gets to be a difficult conversation only when we decide they need constructive feedback, which means we need to fix them. We need to change them. They screwed up. So if instead you say, look, this is how things stand. This is what I think could have been different. This is where we need to go. This is where I think we had a disconnect. And you open the conversation very objectively to how can we get better results. And so, yeah, you've heard all the stuff about, you know, be sure you focus on observable behavior and be sure that you focus on the impact and you're specific and you're timely. And then some people recommend you sandwich the good and the bad, you know, so that,
Oh, I
yeah,
hate that one.
say something good and then something bad and then something good. It's like, get over this good and bad stuff. Let's just talk to people about what is needed and how maybe things need to change.
So we're trying to remove the emotion from the conversation, at least to some point, so that we're not creating emotion in the other
Yeah,
person.
I think the real secret is that you need to take care of your thoughts before you try to script your conversation. The more you control your thoughts and remove the judgments, the less you have to script the conversation, because it's not hard anymore. If you aren't thinking at all in terms of someone having failed or being flawed, then the conversation isn't difficult anymore. Say, look, I think I know a better way for you to do that. If you're interested sometime, let me know and I'll show you what I think might work better.
So if we're giving somebody feedback, let's say, you know, we've been in a meeting and there was all kinds of stuff going on. And you don't know maybe exactly what it was that set that person off. We still have to go back to an example of the behavior or the actions that they
Yes.
took and kind of use that as a starting
Yes.
point. Is
That's a
that
great example.
how, walk me through what
Right.
that
Okay. So
conversation looks like.
something was said or happened that set someone off, and then their behavior was inappropriate. So instead of saying, well, their behavior was inappropriate, you focus on the fact that something set them off. So then you go back to them and say, look, in the meeting this morning, I think there was a disconnect. I don't know exactly what happened. But when so and so said this, things got weird. Things got uncomfortable. You seemed uncomfortable, they seemed uncomfortable, or we got into an argument, or, you know, then you can be specific about what actually happened. But you haven't judged them in any way, shape, or form. You just said things got weird there. Did I trip? Did I set you off? What's going on? You know?
I'm just trying to
Yeah, you're just
understand.
trying to understand, and part of the key there is you recognize how little you actually know. You know virtually
Wait a minute.
nothing about what actually happened or why, right? And the problem is that we
Right?
make assumptions about that the you know what did happen or what didn't happen, and then we need to fix somebody. So the person who got all overwrought in the meeting, we're going to try to control them. Well, who likes to be controlled? You know, who likes to be fixed? But if you just go, look, what happened in the meeting this morning? Because that wasn't very pleasant, and I probably contributed it to it. You know, is there something I should have done differently? Is there something I could have done after it happened that would have made things easier? Let's figure this out together.
Yeah, and then also gathering this from the book that you also want to bring the impact. Okay, what happened there had this impact on other people in the meeting, or what you did has a trickle-down effect. So, but without, how do I do that without
Just
blaming?
the same thing. You're saying, okay, so you know this happened. Something set you off, so you were obviously irritated, and and then you can say, you know what happened next. And this argument or other people got involved, or it didn't work. Something didn't work there. And the ramifications were that, we lost 15 minutes, or we, so and so stomped out, whatever, so talk about that impact. But you really just say, help me understand the situation so that we can avoid that happening again.
Right. Yeah, so it's really nice that, I mean, there's a very mindful approach to the book in how we approach people, not to let's not be doing the fixing, but also to spend more time listening and bringing that sense of curiosity forward to, okay, why is this happening? Rather than those assumptions that we make. And sometimes those assumptions are like, what did I do? People seem to fall in two categories. Either it was them that did something wrong, or it was I that
Exactly.
did something wrong. And that immediately just derails
Exactly.
everything.
And the whole point is to fix the situation, not the person. So fix the situation. So it's not about you. It's not a, I want to be careful with the word why, because if you ask someone, why did you do that? Nothing to make them defensive faster. Say, hey, you have to realize that you don't know why they did it. And you probably don't even know what actually happened. I mean, sometimes, you get mad because someone didn't do something and it turns out they did and you just hadn't been informed yet. You know what I mean? So you got to be careful. But there's a multitude of possible reasons for the why. And if you just say, look, that didn't turn out the way I expected, let's talk about it. What did you expect? What did you think I expected? Where are we? What really did happen? And then if you focus more on the what do we need to do next? What do we need to do to prevent another disconnect like this one? Then you're spending less time digging back into the why and making someone feel uncomfortable. One of the beauties of when especially if you get your whole organization to read the disconnect principle and understand and start to use it, one of the beauties is there is that anybody can say, I think we have a disconnect to anybody else, whether they're above them, below them, whatever the situation is, and it slows down that conversation and lets people go, wait a minute, let us figure this out. And then even more so, suppose I'm an employee and I make a big mistake, and a lot of employees are going to feel terrible, or they're not going to be willing to admit it, or who knows what happens. But I love the notion that I can walk in and say, I think we just had the mother of all disconnects. We got to figure out what to do about this because I did this and I don't think that's what you expected, or, for whatever reasons, but we need to figure out what to do next. So it's a way for people to admit mistakes because they're not blaming the other person, and they're not going to be blamed themselves, and they can even more readily admit, I did screw up. But the focus is on fixing the situation, not the person.
Right. Yeah, and I love that you can use this at all levels of the company. And, I think it's something that when it works into the company
Yes.
culture, where it's totally expected and accepted was more a better word to that, yeah, you can at any point just say, okay, I don't really know where this came from, but here we are. Now, what are we going to
Yeah,
do?
and I use it all the time with my family, my friends, with clients. I think we've got a disconnect here. depending on what tone of voice you say it in, you can relieve a lot of tension that way too.
Especially if things are escalating, right? You can kind of de-escalate by
Boy, if
just
this isn't a
taking a
disconnect, I don't
breath.
know what is, you know. Stop and you say, okay, let's figure out where we are. And I used the term motherhood disconnects a minute ago, and I shouldn't have because I talk at one chapter of the book is I think called The Mother of All Disconnects, or The Ultimate Disconnect. And it's about a totally different issue. Well, it's not totally different, but it's the issue of how we treat employees when we hire them, our relationship in the hiring and terminating, realm of the world. And We too often we just think in terms of the boss has all the power. They hire, they fire, they tell you what to do. It's very hierarchical, and the employee should, in a lot of cases, they'll feel lucky they have a job. But to me, the relationship between an organization and the employee should be one of a good fit, a good match. So the organization should be able to articulate exactly what it is we need, and the other person should be able to say, this is what I'm willing and able to do. And they should create a good, negotiable relationship there where they feel like equals respecting each other and what they need. So the ultimate disconnect, the mother of all disconnects, is when you don't have a match. So instead of thinking in terms of firing a person because they are flawed personally or they failed to measure up, it's no, we've got a disconnect here between what we need and what you're willing and able to provide. So you shift your thinking to fixing the situation again, not the person. So you're not lording anything over them, you're not controlling them, you're not firing them. You're saying, look, this is what we need you to do. You don't, it doesn't seem like that's happening, right? You don't seem like that's what you like doing. You haven't jumped on that. What's going on there? Is this a good fit for you or isn't it? And ideally, and you mentioned culture before because this is so important. If you get the disconnect principle embedded in your culture, if everyone understands that, employees are more empowered to talk about what they really are willing and able to do, and and thinking about whether they want to work for an organization. So when you start talking to an employee who you normally would have said, this is a performance problem, we're going to put you on a PIP, a personal improvement plan, and then if you don't measure up, you're gone. Instead, you say, I'm not. We might have the ultimate disconnect here. We need to either juggle your job, or if what we end up with the responsibilities that fit. If they aren't a full-time job, you need to understand that. Let's see if we can make this work. Otherwise, ideally, the employee says, I don't think it's going to work. I think I need to leave. And I know it's not quite as simple as that, but my clients who have switched to that mentality have their employees feeling much more respected, treated fairly, better communication about what the organization needs, and more personal reflection on whether what they're willing and able to provide fits. Because it's part the employee's responsibility to decide whether that's a good place for them to be. So when they go, the reason I'm not doing that part of the job very well is because I hate it.
That's where quiet quitting comes from, right? Everybody that's in that kind of mode of, yeah, I've always hated doing that, and I'm just not going to do it anymore. But they don't actually say, that is not what I expected to do
Well,
here.
we get, I grew up in the culture too, where you're lucky to get the job and you work for promotions and status and more money and all this, but I think I'd been in the corporate world for an awful lot of years before I had a manager who sat down with me and talked about, if your career goes this way, these are the kinds of things you need to be good at and like doing. But if you head this way, these are the kinds of things you need to be good at and like doing. And it was the first time I realized, oh, and I started thinking about what does a job really entail? What will I do on a daily basis? What part of that do I like? What part of that am I really good at? And I started taking charge of my own career in a way I hadn't before that.
Yeah, and that's really speaks a lot to the current things that we're seeing in HR. We're seeing a trend towards a little more clarity in what a job description is and what it entails. And that makes it easier for people to stay. And it also makes it more flexible within the structure of the organization to say, okay, I like this job, but the more I've been into it, the more I'm thinking I need
Right.
this or I need to be
Right.
doing
And so I think
this.
we're moving that direction. But the more you think of the relationship as a win-win deal, the more responsibility you put on the employee to get it right, and the more responsibility you put on the manager to realize that, if they hired the wrong person for this job, it's more their fault than the employee. A lot of cases, it's not
Well, it's a clarity
flawed,
disconnect, right?
You should never
Yeah.
think in terms of people being flawed. That it's that they have personality problems. Yes, there are some that have pretty extreme personality issues, but mostly people want to do well. They want to do their best. They want to be helpful. They want to be successful. And finding that match so that they can really be successful for the company is the one of the most important jobs of a manager. I always say that, manager's number one responsibility is to create clarity. Well, clarity in that match is probably the highest piece of that. And by the way, it's really, really hard. I'll not pretend that I'm the
Yeah.
greatest person at finding making those matches work, but there are people who are, and as long as they focus on the match, they're more likely to get it right. If they focus on hiring the best, what does that mean? Hiring someone with the best
Based
credentials,
upon.
hiring someone, it's like, no, who's the best fit for how you're going to ask them to spend 40 hours or more a week?
Yeah, and as a manager, I think that, I don't know how to put this well, so I'll just put it. A lot of managers don't actually know what their employees are
That's right.
doing. So they can't actually do the job description
Right. Yeah.
correctly.
And they don't have to know exactly what the employee's doing. But they have to understand the difference between people who are problem solvers, like me, the software engineers, people who are people who are craftsmen and they want to physically build something. People, so it's the different types of way that you want to spend your time. So, I know people who are organizers. By God, they will organize anything and drive you nuts doing it, They'll get all the systems in a row. But you wouldn't want to take an organizer and turn them into a manager who has to deal with, helping other people do their jobs well. So it's not understanding the details of how they spend their time, but helping them understand how they will spend their time in terms of those core activities, I think. But I'm not great at that part, man. I'm great at creating clarity.
Well, that's good. That's good. And it's very clear in the book. I think that, I just finished a book on conflict management. It's really a mindful approach to conflict management, and I just love it. But at the same time, it was funny. I was talking with my partner, and she said, "Well, it's not very well organized, and we all have different ways. I do things very fluidly, and she does things very organized and not always methodical, but just like she likes process. And I'm kind of the opposite." So it's really interesting that we have to figure out how to come to terms with that and go through the day going, okay, this definitely was a disconnect. And not with a judgmental kind of, okay, did it again, but okay, let's talk about that. Let's take that to a different attitude than, oh gosh, She did it again.
Exactly. That you
Three
get it just
dildos.
right. He did it again. Okay. And this all came about because I was coaching a client who had a had to, he had an employee with a history of performance issues, and he needed to go in and have a conversation with him. And I said, well, let's sit down first. And I taught him everything I knew about, observable behavior and impact and words to avoid and don't ask why. And, I taught him everything I could think of. And I talked to him about, okay, now what exactly happened? Can you, instead of thinking about the track record of the 10 other times that you hauled this guy down to straighten him out, let's forget that. Let's pick one incident. Let's talk about exactly what happened objectively, specifically, and the impact. I had him all prepped. And then afterwards he walks out and, and it's clear he failed again. And the
No.
employee was defensive and irate, and he was irate, and it's all because no matter how hard he tried to be careful and objective and follow the script, in his mind, this guy had failed again. This guy had screwed up again. This was the 10th time. He needed to set him straight. So every impromptu word, every facial expression, his body language, it none of it jived with the script. The guy could see through it. And especially those the impromptu words, as soon as you get off script, you're in deep weeds if your thoughts are in the wrong place. And that's when I conceived the disconnect principle. And I give you the whole disconnect principle in chapter one, but it's when I started teaching the disconnect principle to clients, I discovered all the ways in which it's more difficult to make it really work for you, because there are all these things that we're taught as managers that really oppose the disconnect approach. So that's why there's chapters 2 through 8. And each one tackles another one of these obstacles to really using the disconnect principle as fully and completely as you can.
Oh, I love that because, we do not absorb things by reading, okay, I got it, and then
Yeah.
we move on. We need to have actual practice in order to get
Yeah, and
better.
I have clients who they've gotten really good at saying, we've got a disconnect. I'm pretty sure we've got a disconnect, but they struggle to resolve those disconnects because of those other obstacles.
And the finger pointing part too. We have
Yeah, well,
disconnect.
if they say it with that tone of voice, you've got a problem, yes. I think we've got a disconnect here.
I love it. I really enjoyed the principle, and really, your examples in the book are really spot on because we can visualize those things happening in our own relationships, in our own businesses, and see, oh, that's where that was. And if once we can start looking for the disconnects, then we can work with them,
Right.
not fix them, but
Yeah, and
work with
to
them.
help with that, in the book I've put a lot of sample dialogue so that you say, I think we have a disconnect, and then, what are the next words out of your mouth? So while people really have to gradually fully embrace the disconnect principle and what it means to fix a situation and not the person, the sample dialogue will help you work your way through lots of specific situations of what would you say in this case and what would you say in this case. And so I got the ideas for the sample dialogue by teaching this class to a bunch of clients. And I just literally wrote down the questions they asked, the situations they asked about. And so I answered all those in the book, is that, when this happens, this is what you say. And so it's meant to have you understand the principle as a whole, but then be able to gradually unlearn some of the traditional management habits that have make it really difficult for us to fully embrace it.
I love that. That it's very helpful.
Good,
So
thanks.
thank you. Well, and I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us today, and I would love for you to let people know, okay, where they can get the book, why they need the book, and how to connect with
Okay,
you.
I hope I've already conveyed why they need the book. So go out and get the Disconnect Principle. It's available on Amazon and will be in other places soon, but I haven't done that yet. It's I have a website called disconnectprinciple.com, and there's also my website, my own, at annlatham.com, where you can find out more about all my books and more about what I do and what people think of those books. It's all there.
Well, thank you. It's been such a pleasure. And I'll put all those links in the blog post and it'll be in the podcast. And really, go get the book and then get the other book.
Yeah, The Power of Clarity. I'd love to talk to you about that one in the future at some time. But yes, and I'd be happy for anyone to connect with me on LinkedIn who hears this, and I'll send you that link as well so you have it.
Thanks for tuning in for another episode of Mindful Social. It's been so great to see the subscriptions growing, and the feedback has really helped me make the show even better. So if you know somebody who needs to be on the show, email me at janet@janetfouts.com, and please send me feedback there too, or post a review on the podcast platform you're listening on. Oh, and do me a favor, share this show on social media or with a friend. Thank you.